This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 806, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, they're wearing their masks, they're getting vaccinated, they're getting boosters if they can, drinking water, exercise, stretching. Don't forget stretching.
Stretching is, you know what, that's good. That's very true. And I, you know what, I am lax. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not a tiger,
iFanboy Pick a Week, episode 806. 806.
806.
Six.
I did the script and I wrote the six and I was like, it's been 6 weeks since we did that long show. I'm pretty sure that was Thursday.
My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, the Unbelievabling.
That's my rap name, Unbelievable.
I'm trying to get that going. I'm trying to get it started as a word. Josh Flanagan.
Make it a thing, Unbelievabling.
He's Unbelievabling. We are iFanboy, and we're getting close to the end of the year, and you can hear it. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the one they like the best, called it the pick of the week. We talk about that, but we talk about other books. We talk about the patron pick. We try to do some email. We make a concerted effort to do so, and we have some fun along the way. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a blanket spoiler warning for everything we talk about in the show. So use some caution and the show notes. This week, Josh, you had the pick.
I like that you had like a little moment of justifying your guilt over email. It was a blip. It was like, listen, we try our best and we move on. I was like, I don't know if anyone else noticed that, but obviously Connor's concerned we're not getting the emails enough. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's not a lot of books on the script. I can't promise that that's going to be a thing though.
Right.
I have a lot of thoughts.
Mm.
I have many thoughts.
On?
Weird of comic books, which is appropriate because this is exactly the time. Yeah,
that's what we do here.
So pick of the week this week is Robin and Batman number one by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen with letters by Steve Wands. What was your level of surprise at that?
Very high.
Very high.
I mean, not like a 10 out of 10, but it was probably like an 8.
Okay. So I read my books this week. I don't think there were a lot of them, and it was a fairly trouble-free reading experience, and I had nothing. Mm-hmm. I had no front runner, so I had to do the thing. And the next book that we're going to talk about, What's the Furthest Place from Here? That's a spoiler, I suppose, for the show itself. I was like, well, I really liked that book, and it's new, so mm-hmm. that would make a good pick. But it was kind of what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about Robin and Batman, which I saw it, and I thought, I said it was just, so it was Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. I went, all right, I'll read it. You know,
mm-hmm.
and probably part of the way into it, I found myself pretty compelled, and I believe that the reason was, of course, it was well done. Those are very experienced and gifted creators.
And they've worked together in several books.
Yeah, but I think the other thing was that, so what you've got here is a Robin origin story, a Dick Grayson origin story, and it is a version of it that did not feel familiar to me. When we talk about Dick Grayson, we talk about this happy-go-lucky, self-assured kid, mm-hmm. you know, and all of the times that they go back to the Robin story where the you know, there's conflict and there's the kid trying to prove himself doing dumb stuff, it's usually the other Robins. You know, like, mm-hmm. like Dick Grayson is often like, he had his shit together and he taught Batman a thing or two. And you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, because I'm sure that lots of versions...
We did do the Robin Year One book last year for Pick of the Week, and he did fuck up and almost die and kill Batman.
Yeah, but this was a unique version of it, I thought. I thought the voice of it was interesting. I thought it dealt with, you know, like the trauma of his parents dying, you know, and I know that that makes him the opposite of Batman, that he deals with it in a different way.
Yep.
But for whatever reason, I was really, I was drawn into it, and I had not expected to be. And so I think that's where we got here, and I got to the end, and I was like, oh, I really want to know what's going to happen next. And if you can... I don't know about surprise me, but if you can hook me with something that is incredibly tired and I've read 1,000 times over, you know, from a writer who I like a lot, but he's hit or miss with me, Jeff Lemire, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not even like sometimes it's bad, it's just sometimes I'm not interested. I just found myself surprised.
Right.
I liked it. I basically, like, I just enjoyed a story that I had not expected to, and they managed to put something into it. They managed to find some little angle that made it work for me. And it was beautiful, too. I mean, I've always liked Dustin Nguyen. I've liked him since he was on Wildcats with Joe Casey 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't always like the projects that he chooses, but he doesn't look like anybody else. You know, I really liked the way that the villains were handled in this.
Mm-hmm.
I like this version of Killer Croc, for example. Also, I'm a huge fan of when Batman calls Killer Croc by his first name. He does that with a bunch of the villains, and those
it's
are my
dismissive.
Favorites. No, you know what? I don't look at it that way. I look at that as sometimes it's dismissive, but sometimes he's trying to, like, with him, he's like trying to like connect with a human in there. He does it with Clayface. Yeah. He does it with, you know, Man Bat. You know, he's like, hey, you're what's his name? Nolan, I think. Waylon.
Yes.
I love that. It's one of those workaday things. You know, like when mm-hmm. the cops and the robbers kind of know each other.
Right.
That's what it feels like to me. And I don't know, just this version, this depiction of Dick Grayson, sort of his size and scope, like he's a kid in this, and it's all age and place appropriate, I think. And again, you know, one more thing, you know, there's a lot of first-person narration here, and while it was a little mature, it wasn't out of the realm of sort of possibility. And
yeah, I mean, it's a little bit aged.
A little. Yeah, but he's a really smart and gifted kid, so you can do that, or maybe he's looking back at it. You know, I don't know. I also like the version of Batman here. You know, he's got a little 5 o'clock shadow. He's
a little angry.
I think part of it is that it just rooted everything in the real world a little more than we've been getting with Batman, if that makes sense. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what the secret sauce is.
Yeah, the interesting thing here is it's not one of those like retro modern books, mm-hmm. but it also feels very timeless. Like it could appear in any era.
Yeah.
Which I guess is retro modern, but it doesn't, you know, there aren't guys like walking around with Tommy guns and fedoras, but also it could have taken place 20 years ago, and that would make sense.
Yeah.
I like that timeless aspect of it. And as you said, the Dustin Nguyen art is beautiful. It's like this fully realized watercolor environment all the time.
Yeah.
And it just looks gorgeous. And it also, as you said, it plays with the very familiar elements of the Batman-Robin story. You know, there's some minor twists here and there. You know, the overall idea is that Dick has reached the end of his training period, and he's anxious to get out on the streets, but Batman is clearly not convinced and worried, which I think partially is why he's so angry.
Things. And I think that this is where this whole talk, this whole conversation is me trying to get to the root of what the thing is. And I think it's that neither of them are wrong.
Right.
Robin feels like he's ready to move forward, and he probably is, but he has doubts, and he isn't quite ready because he's not going to be ever. Batman is worried, so he holds him back longer, but he also kind of knows it's time to let him go. And you can tell that because there's a bit where, you know, Robin makes his costume up, and then Batman, who had seemed completely against it and resolute, and we've seen this from this character 1,000 times, you know, like, no, and I've said it. And then, you know, the person breaks the rule, and they go out and do it, and then he gets mad at them. But in this, he went and he made him a costume. He changed his mind. And maybe that's part of it. That's one of those little things that isn't what's normally done. It's 5% more human than it usually is, and I think that made it work.
Yeah, and he's clearly conflicted.
Mm-hmm.
the place that Batman's in right now, I assume it's evidenced by the 5 o'clock shadow and evidenced by the fact that he's a little rougher with verbally with Dick, is that he hasn't had Robin yet to chill him out, you know? So he's still a little frustrated and angry and worried. And while this seems like a good idea, he's not 100% convinced he should have a partner at all. And so he keeps moving the goalposts on Robin in terms of training and the tests he has to pass and all that stuff. So that's happening. But then, you know, one of the missions is Killer Croc. And at this point, Dick has gotten so frustrated, he's made himself a version of the classic Robin costume, but with pants. And he goes out on his own. And Killer Croc is like, where did you get this costume? I've seen this costume before. So this is the twist on the story, is that Killer Croc was the Crocodile Man in the Haley Circus while the Graysons were there. So now he recognizes the costume because Dick bases it off of his parents' costume, which was sometimes done in Robin canon, sometimes not done in Robin canon. It's always been based on a circus costume.
Sure.
That's always wearing a tunic over a unitard.
And that's why he could get away with boy panties in the past, but can't now.
There's a twist there. Traditionally speaking, at least for a long time, the Dick Grayson story began with Two-Face, and that was, at least that was the Chuck Dixon era. And now they're sort of making Killer Croc the original Robin villain, I guess, which is fine. You can play with all the stuff.
Overall, what did you think of this?
I liked it a lot. I thought it was terrific. Okay. You know, and not just because I love Batman and Robin, but I thought this was a really well-done comic, as you, for all the reasons you said. It was interesting psychological stuff going on here, interesting father-son dynamics, even if they don't realize that's what their relationship is yet, you know? Mm-hmm. Beautifully drawn. And, you know, for the same reasons you were not super excited, like Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen have been doing these sci-fi books at Image for years that I just haven't been into. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been Ascender and then Descender. I tried them both.
Then they went down.
And or the other way around. I don't remember which order they came out in. But, you know, I wasn't super into them. But I know these guys clearly like working with each other. And I like Jeff Lemire a lot. He's sort of having a renaissance. And he's clearly tuned into DC, the evidence of his Black Hammer work, which is just DC stuff.
He took a thing that should have been tired and he lent something to it. And, you know, 10, 12 years into his career, more than that maybe. More.
Yeah,
you know, that. And that's not nothing either. So, yeah, because a little conflict. It wasn't a blow-you-away thing. It was like, wow, that's really well done. And that's great. You know, that makes me happy.
It's a really great complete package. It was a really well done comic. It's oversized. It's like 40 pages. It's a 3-issue mini. So you'll get like a trade size story out of it.
Love a 3-issue mini. Like I said, the runner up was What's the Furthest Place from Here, number one. It's a little different than normal because I had read this a while back before I talked to Matt Rosenberg. And if you read this and enjoyed it, or maybe even didn't enjoy it, like you should go listen to that show. I think it was a really thoughtful conversation on how you make a comic book. It's an end-of-the-world apocalypse comic book, as we are wont to do. It was conceived before the pandemic started. I know that much. From Tyler Boss and Matt Rosenberg, and they had previously done Four Kids Walk Into a Bank.
Yeah.
And I did not know what it was or what to expect. I was really blown away by the craft of the thing, perhaps more than the story of the thing. And I think that's why it's not necessarily pick of the week. I also just think it is one of those first chapter things where I don't really know where we stand yet. It's very vague. It's not giving you a lot. You got to hang out. You got to watch. But I like the experience of it a lot. And I like the construction. The construction is it's done in, I think, 6 chapters. And the way things are revealed and the way that the dialogue is just sort of like not terribly narrative. It's like things that you hear as you're standing around and you've kind of got to work at it. But at the same time, it's pretty sparse. I really enjoyed this a heck of a lot, but I want to know what happens next.
That's been the trend for a while with Image, is that the first issue, you're just usually 9 times out of 10, you're just not sure what we're doing here. But we'll figure it out eventually. I liked this. I don't know that I connect all that much with Rosenberg's indie work as much as I do his mainstream stuff. I think this is a different sensibility. I thought it looked great. I think Tyler Boss is terrific.
I think that his mainstream work is more entertaining. And what I mean by that is, I'm going to really dumb it down, but a Marvel movie versus a DC movie.
Well, I think he also taps into something. He's their similar age as we are.
Yeah.
I think he taps into something from when we were younger, that Marvel feeling.
He's got a way with those Marvel books, though, that he, and his DC books, the stuff that he's mainstream, he makes them funny, and he makes them more fun than you expect they're going to be. Because I think of him like he's got kind of a hard-boiled thing going on, but it's funny. He did that great Thunderbolt series that we loved so much.
Yeah. No, his stuff is definitely funny.
Yeah, and this, it's just a different tone. It's a different side of him. You know, and listen, I'm going to be in the tank for this. You know, like you said, we're the same age. We're very, you know, have similar tastes. They live in a record store. You know, if I look around the shot at the beginning of all the records, and like, I own most of those records. So Right. You know, I'm in the tank for it to a certain extent. We're not going to talk about that. I didn't actually get the record. I wanted to. I pre-ordered it, but I don't know if it actually
came. I don't think anybody did because of shipping issues.
Okay.
At least anecdotally from what I've seen around the internet is people saying they haven't gotten it yet.
Okay.
And I think that's part of it. Like, I started reading the little interview in the back, and it was like he started going off about how, you know, for everybody, the music you like defines you, and you choose it early, and it guides the rest
of your
life.
You're not like that, though.
And I was like, well, that's not everyone, Matt. That's some people. That's people who hug out record stores.
It's true. It's a way that's...
I'd argue it's not most people.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a myopic feeling in terms of everyone is like this. It's not the case. Which is fine. I don't hate it. I think that's why I don't 100% connect with it, because there's a sensibility here that I don't connect with because I don't have it.
Yeah.
So this is a bunch of teenagers who are living in this record store, and they continue to go through the records as if they're shopping. And I actually really did like the double reversal on this. So it opens up, there's a guy in a bathroom, and this girl comes in, you know, his tooth has fallen out, and so you're like, oh God, is he dying? Like, is this some sort of plague situation? And then she's all excited because she found the perfect record. She shows it up at Hall & Oates, and we reveal they're in a record store. And like I said, everyone's sort of just going through the records in this establishment shots. So I thought, oh, okay, well, they're just in the record store. Because I didn't know what this was about either.
Sure.
Then it's a double reversal that it is a post-apocalyptic plague situation or something. You know, so I like that it was like it played with your sensibility within the first three pages twice. Like, what is the story? I thought that was a really elegant reversal. And after that, you get to the sort of story, which is there are no adults, something happens and you age out, and the world has fallen apart, and it's being run by teenage gangs. And that's sort of the overall.
It's a lot. It's eight chapters, actually. Yeah. And you only get a very small view of the world in the first one.
Yeah.
Like, you know what happens from the perspective of these kids, because they're not explaining it to you. But, you know, as I go through it, it's one of those things where, like, on every page, there's something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, she ends up with a gun at some point and shoots it at a rival gang. And the rival gang all wear smiling big masks, which is just a fantastic visual element that sort of it's incongruous. So, mm-hmm. You know, you're just put off the whole time. You know, the kids are also, like, they're not heroic kids.
No.
They're just kids trying to get by and waste their time the same way that kids would anyway, even though they're an apocalypse. They're like, hey, let's listen to records and get drunk and draw penises on people. Like, it's not like a survivor's tale of incredible people.
There are characters in the group like that. They're the competent leadership people. Sure. But for the most part, you know, one of the girls is pregnant. You know, I don't think there's any doctors or hospitals around. That's probably a problem. You know, they're being irresponsible teenagers, as they would be if with no supervision. And
oh, and
no
there's these weird
hope.
Nun character things.
Yeah.
Sister, whatever they are. I don't know. There's a lot. And it's not quite landed, but it's a well-done comic book. And it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to more.
And I'm definitely interested in the next issue. I didn't dislike it at all. I enjoyed it, for sure.
Sticking on the Image line, where are you at on Stillwater these days? The 11th issue came out.
This is funny. So I read issue 11, and I was like, what the fuck is going on?
It's 1 year later, at the very first page.
I read the whole thing, and I was like, I don't understand what's happening anymore. Do I hate this now? What's happening? And then I figured out that because issue 10 came out when I was at the wedding, I never read it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a pretty pivotal issue.
Yes.
It really changed the story. So I went back and read 10 and then 11 again. I was like, okay, I understand now. I was completely lost when I read 11, not having read 10. Because the whole dynamic changed in 10. And then we had a 1 year later jump. So mm-hmm. I was just like, I must hate this now because I have no idea what's going on.
So it was better when you went back.
It was better when I went back and read 10.
I think that this is suffering from, for me, it's one of those Image things. When you're going to do a really long story, you have to have it change a lot. But I think that these folks aren't as good with pacing as they were back in the Vertigo days.
Yes, but also I don't think it's changing enough.
I think that the thing is that I'm trying to figure out what it is. It's
both. I think it's both.
It's only the 11th
issue.
Which
is a weird thing to say.
I think that we were just getting settled in the world, and then the next thing had to happen. And then a lot of things that happened relied on character stuff of characters that we didn't know and weren't terribly invested in. And so now there's a lot of characters doing a lot of things, and I don't know any of them well enough to understand the significance of it or kind of care what happens to them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
This is very much a consciously post-Walking Dead book, right? It's,
yes.
It's a similar feel. It's a similar situation. It's not, obviously the world is not ended in zombies, but there's a lot of characters living in this town. Everyone who lives in the town is immortal. They're desperately trying to keep the secret of the town, keep outsiders out and people in, and keep the peace. It's run in authoritative style, like all the towns in Walking Dead were. It has a very conscious post-Walking Dead feel. The problem is, Robert Kirkman and Charlie Adler were really good at creating character archetypes and distinct looks for all the characters.
Yeah, there is
now,
that.
Now, I'm going to put a pin in it and say there was obviously problems in Walking Dead with that. Sometimes you had very similar looking characters, same hair. They had that problem. But the main characters, the main cast, you always knew who Rick was. You always knew who Michonne was. Here, there's just a lot of regular looking people. And I forgot. I was like, oh, the redhead was the sheriff, right? Like, they just...
Yeah.
There's a lot to keep track of because they're just regular folks.
And the main character whose name I not even don't remember, I couldn't tell you with a gun to my head what it was.
Right.
I know what he was like in the first and second issue,
mm-hmm.
but since that time, he's unrecognizable to me. I never know exactly what it is. I'm like, oh, he's the handsome one who's standing in the middle of everything for no reason. And mm-hmm. I know that his mother was there. And every once in a while, I'm like, but the redheaded lady isn't his mother. Because she left and then she comes back at the end of this and she's a badass. The main character is not defined enough.
Yeah. I know nothing about him other than he was working at an advertising agency in the beginning or something
right.
like that.
And he was kind of miserable. He came there and they shot his friend. And then he got into it. He's like, all right, I'm here now. I mean, this is supposed to be over the course of a couple of years now. And that makes sense. But, you know, of a book that I read, you know, maybe once a month, they took a hiatus at some point. Like, I'm having a hard time holding on to the threads of it. And I like the book, but it is struggling on holding me just in the face of all the other stuff. And it's pretty complicated.
There's interesting things here, mm-hmm. which keeps me going. So you said the paradigm is switched three times. So we started off just learning about the town. The town's run by this judge and the sheriff, and they're keeping the peace. And then however many issues in, one of the characters, his marine buddies show up. And so they try to take over the town when they find out that you can be immortal living there. And that lasts for like two issues. And now the kids are somehow in charge.
Yeah.
Which I get it. But also, like, I don't believe that these people will let the kids run the town. Because they're still
kids. Are they kids? I guess they are kids. Are they just,
well, they're 50-year-old kids. They're in kid bodies.
Right. But did their minds mature like people would have, but their bodies didn't? I think that's the thing is that they...
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying they're physically yeah. still children.
Yeah. What I'm wondering, though, is, like, are their minds still children? Like, they know a lot more and they have a lot. But, you know, kids, like, their impulse control is different.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I think that that's what's happening, which makes what you're saying make more sense. That, like, why would you let them do it? Like they're mad that they're not maturing, and that understands, and they have a lot of knowledge, but emotionally, you're more fucked up as a kid, basically.
Right. But my point is, like,
yeah,
you know, I don't care if a five-year-old has a gun. I can kick that five-year-old pretty easily. I like the idea that these kids got really pissed off that they're not allowed to grow up. And this is not a new idea in fiction. It's even up into including the Eternals film. But they're all pissed off because... They see other people leave the town and come back, and they've matured, and the one main character, he left when he was a kid, and he came back, and now he's like a handsome 25-year-old, and they all want to be adults. And so that's why they have banded together into in their Ewok village and have taken over the town. There's interesting things going on here. It's just, like many of these books, it might read better altogether when you can keep everything together in your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's probably the case. Like, if you're reading this in trades, you're probably enjoying it more.
As opposed to skipping over an issue and not knowing anything that's going on. I was not angry. I was like, what the fuck is happening? It's the worst possible issue to miss. Did you read The Thing number one? I don't know why I said eight, but it's number one.
Yeah, I did. I think I probably wrote that eight. I did. I didn't know what to expect from it. I saw the name Walter Mosley, and I thought, that's not a comic book person. I had to refresh myself on who it was, but I said, oh, okay, right. And I didn't really know what to expect from it. And at the end of the day, I think I didn't really get a heck of a lot from it.
Interesting.
I want to know what you had to say.
I just thought it was really fun. It was very classic Marvel. It seems to be set in sort of the late 80s period, which is a sweet spot. And it's just a Thing story.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Tom Riley's art here is terrific.
Yeah.
That's not a name I know at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. Didn't hurt to have Jordi Belair on colors. I think that sort of brought it
up. No, but
together.
Tom Riley's got sort of a Steve Lieber, a little bit of Chris Somney. It's like all
that.
These things mixed into a blender. Actually, more Chris Somney than Steve Lieber now that I'm looking at the faces.
Yeah.
And this is just a story where the Thing comes back from a trip and the whole Fantastic Four is gone. Reed and Sue are at a conference. Johnny's somewhere. And so a situation happens and the Thing's the only one around to take care of it. And, you know, he's jealous of Alicia's friend from Puerto Rico.
He overreacts a little bit.
Hey, listen, look, she's holding his arm. He's got a jaunty pink shirt on. The cuffs are rolled up. He looks like Cesar Romero. I'd be worried too.
He's got those short pants with no socks.
Right.
Which could put it today or the 80s. That's the thing.
Exactly.
He ends up in jail with Hercules.
Classic Hercules is there. I just thought this was a really fun story. And there's a villain that takes people's hearts out of their bodies and turns them into like stone or whatever. And
I guess he doesn't know that's also happening over in Nightwing.
Right. So listen, there's a lot of things that happen in a lot of places. I thought the art was terrific. I liked the thing's story was fun. There's a whole weird thing going on here, and he's one of the best characters in Marvel, and it's just nice to have him getting a little showcase as the main character. He's not an investigator. Normally it's like Reed points him at a thing to punch, and he punches it really hard, and that's the end of the story. So here he's got to deal with everything. He's got to investigate the crime. He's got to figure out what's going on. He's got to save the day. I liked all that.
I like what it looked like. It just didn't make much of an impact on me. That was fine. I had kind of hoped. I was like, maybe this will be a great thing, the story, which is totally always my thing. You know, like I want something to be great, and when it's fine, I'm like, all right. Fine is almost worse than bad to me, which is a theme of all of my reviews of all time for history. I thought it was good. The art I think was the best part, is that it is unexpected, because I didn't know who it was. And this is very competent.
Yeah, really, really good.
Good use of sound effects through the whole thing, and pretty good. And also for, you know, a novelist, not a bad comic script.
No, not at all.
I think they've gotten better at that. I feel like editorial at Marvel has gotten better, or at DC, at all of them, when they bring in somebody from somewhere else, you know, like making sure the scripts are not disasters like they used to be. It's almost like they used to be afraid to tell the person, like, no, you've written this badly. But now that does not seem to happen the way that it used to. Because we always pointed out, this isn't overwritten. And now most aren't. That was a thing.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's still a thing that happens every once in a while. But for the most part, it wasn't like the early 2000s where it was just a disaster zone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break here to talk about how you can support the show. We're reaching towards the end of the year. And support for iFanboy and all of our various shows is always appreciated. There's a lot of ways you can do it. The main one is patreon.com/iFanboy. That's the way to directly support the show. People who've done that have directly unlocked many shows for everyone to listen to. The Talk Explodes, the Books Explodes, the Media Explodes, those have all been locked by the patrons. They've unlocked the YouTube uploads we've been doing of our old video shows from 15 years ago. And the other benefit is you get to be part of a great community. There's a Discord channel, server, community, however you call that. There's a Facebook group. And it's a really great community full of people who hang out all day talking about comics and various things. We do really appreciate it, Josh and I, and the whole team behind the scenes and all the other various hosts we have. We know it can be tough out there, and any support you can throw our way is appreciated. It helps us offset the bills it costs to run the things, and helps us make up for the time we spend away from our families doing the show, and the edits, and the reading, and all the stuff we have to do to get the shows done. As we get towards the holidays, we do appreciate any help you can give us through these various means I'm about to talk about, other than Patreon. It includes ifanboy.threadless.com. We got 11 t-shirt designs. We got a 12th one that we just approved. Just approved the design, so it's going to be coming out very soon. We've got a 13th one that we're looking at for early next year, so they're still coming. If you feel like you want to get your grandmother a Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters t-shirt for the holidays,
Has there ever been a better slogan for a time?
No.
I mean, like, the people who listen to the show, who comment on posts or whatever, it's always right there, like, this doesn't make it, nothing makes sense, nothing matters, and just go, yep, it's Serenity Now, but better.
And that's why it's our number one design. That's why it's our hottest seller.
Yeah.
And so, if you're looking for a gift for the holidays, there's some t-shirts there. Or you want to just treat yourself, there's t-shirts there. And there'll be, like I said, a new one coming out very soon. ifanboy.com/support. You know, end of the year, you got a little bit of extra money, want to throw $5 in the tip jar? That's where you can do it. ifanboy.com/support's our PayPal link, and you can do that. People do that all the time. We thank anyone who does it.
But if you were gonna do 10,000 and you just heard Connor say $5 and you thought, oh, maybe I'll do $5 instead, don't listen to that.
Yeah, maybe you're one of those eccentric billionaires we used to always talk about all the time, and you were finally getting around to saying, well, I gotta get rid of $60 million before the end of the year. I was going to throw it in the tip jar, but he said $5, so I'll do $5. Reconsider.
We will convert what we do. Just let us know ahead of time and say, I need you guys to be a 501(c).
Yeah,
and we'll go, we'll do that. But what I understand is that the rich aren't, there's not more of them now, but the ones that are there are much more wealthy than they used to be.
Yeah.
Which seems like, A, somebody listening to this.
Mathematically speaking,
just must be extremely, or the, you know, like your parents are,
right?
You know,
someone did really well during the pandemic,
and as a percentage of overall wealth,
mm-hmm.
I feel like we're not asking too much for a 6 to 7 figure donation.
You won't even notice it, honestly. Let's be clear, it's a rounding error.
Like, and if you're not, talk to us. We will
make change.
We will work with you on this. I do, because like I feel like maybe that there's a billionaire. And they're like, well, I'm not sure. And they're shy. Like, they don't want to, like, well, I don't want
to create,
I don't want to create a paperwork problem for them or something like that. Like, oh, how would, I mean, what a hassle, though, to accept all that money. Like, Connor and I do not feel that way.
Yeah, no. Just to be clear, just to assuage any guilt you might have. We don't worry about the paperwork. We'll handle the paperwork. We'll make all the phone calls. whatever you need to do.
I love the idea that this social awkwardness is holding somebody back from donating a stupid amount of money to a comic book podcast. Like somebody's just sitting around in their indoor pool, yeah, giraffes, yeah, cool, yeah, and Harley Davidson's.
There's a monkey handing out drinks, a little tuxedo,
and they're just tortured. God, maybe I should do this. I don't know.
I don't want to make it awkward for the guys.
And as they're thinking about it, they wave away Brad Pitt, like Brad, not now.
The monkey whisks them away.
They're on a beach. Somebody's prepared a sumptuous meal, a fresh god seafood. They just walk away.
Don't even take a bite.
Not even one clam. That's all they ate.
And finally, fanboy.com/Amazon. This is where you can find links to our Books Blood books. And also, it's the end of the year. If you're doing shopping for the holidays for yourself or for others, consider using the fanboy.com/Amazon link for that. We do appreciate it. All of these things you do to help support the show. Of course, the show goes on for free, as always. But we always do appreciate anyone who helps to support and reaches out. And we do thank you for that. Josh, I will... Okay. Speaking of money, I will pay you $1 American if you can tell me what the fuck is going on in A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance.
So I read the second issue this week, and I went, no, the second issue came out, I said, I don't think I read the first issue. It was on one of those off weeks. So I went back, and I went through it, and I was like, oh, I did read this. And I actually liked the first issue. It was fairly clear. Mm-hmm. The second issue I had a harder time with, but I liked it. I mean, basically, like, there's some sort of network of contract killers, and like they bumped into each other. So this contract killer is going to end up getting blamed by a series of chances for a murder that he didn't commit. But at the same time, he took another job where they teamed him with somebody that he didn't know, and they had to go kill this woman. That's as much as I know.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. He seems really nervous.
Yeah.
He gives a lot of money to his mom's old folks home, take care of her, seems like forever now. Like it seems like he's going on a suicide mission. Like, I just don't understand. Because partially what Rick Remender and Andre Lima Araujo are doing is they're telling, it's not silent, but it's mostly silent. There's not a lot of dialogue.
You're right, and I think that ambiguity makes it difficult, but I think it's really beautiful. And
it's beautiful. Yeah.
Andre Lima Araujo, like the storytelling, terrific. And it says there's something I like about it. It's very un-Remender. It's extremely un-Remender, and I find that interesting. So I found that this issue was harder to grasp than the first one, which I thought was pretty good, but I'm absolutely willing to stick with it.
I think you're right. This is almost the opposite of in-your-face, funny Remender. This is very quiet, obviously. There's not a lot of dialogue, and subdued and slow.
But it's
almost feels like it's an experiment. He's trying, and it's working in terms of, I don't know what's going on, but it's finding it interesting.
In terms of understanding where the main character at, Benedict Wong.
Right.
You can tell where he is emotionally the whole time, which I yes. think is really cool.
It's a credit to the art.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Action Comics.
Action Comics number 1036, or 3 years after 1000, or 4 weeks, however often they come out, I don't know. This is sort of the beginning of Superman and the Authority get to War World, and I want to read this, but I also don't want to read this.
So this is the issue where they attempt to put together the disparate threads of Superman stories. So,
yeah,
as we discussed previously, we had two different Superman stories going on. We had Philip Kennedy Johnson's lead up to War World, and then we had Grant Morrison's lead up to War World, and neither one of them made sense. In this issue, we try to put it together.
And I'm fine where we stand now.
It turns out that Superman is, in fact, old and losing his powers like he was in Grant Morrison's book. It's just that Manchester Black's been using his magic to hide the fact that he's old and
losing his
powers. And so... suddenly he's got great temples, and he's not as strong as he was. And Trench has just been using her magic to boost his powers, so he's actually weak and old. And so what I think happened is Morrison and Michael Janin's miniseries was done as a lead-up to Future State in the DiDio era, because, you know, Morrison's usually like a few years behind in terms of his writing. Huh. And then DiDio got fired, and they're like, well, fuck, we have this miniseries. And so they had put it out, and they had Philip Kennedy Johnson had to figure out a way to make it work together with what was happening in the current books in the new paradigm. So here, he has a weakness, and he's not as strong, so this won't be quite as easy to liberate Warworld as we thought. Yeah, whatever.
So we don't know why he's getting weak. He's getting old.
He got poisoned by some shit somewhere. Radiation poisoning. His powers have been fading for months.
That's dumb.
Yeah. Really dumb.
It's dumb. I don't need it.
It's all excuses to keep him off the planet.
Superman's vulnerability cannot come from him physically. That is what makes him compelling. Superman's vulnerabilities have to come from his emotions and his personality, not his body. And I know that the story works the other way. If you say, well, you'll see that he's still strong even without his body, but that is not as interesting, I think. And they're forcing him out of the wave.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I'm totally going to read it, though. Do you know why? Because I desperately want to love Superman comics. And for a while, we've had Superman comics to love. And so I'm going to grasp on as much as I can. I mean, you've done this with Batman. You're like, we're gonna read it till we get something good. And it's not bad. Like, I didn't read this. Like, oh, this is a piece of shit. It's a story that's being railroaded. And the people have to figure out how to make it work, like you said. And that's never good. Nope. Sometimes it's good, but mostly. Sea of Stars number 11 is the last issue of this series, mini-series. 11's a weird one to end on, so you figure, you know, do your own math on that. I had actually let this one build up.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't read it, because same thing. About 12 issues of an Image series, somewhere around 7, 8, 9, it starts to be like, I don't know what the fuck is going on anymore. But I really like everybody involved with this. Actually, I've had conversations, friendly, non-comics conversation with all of the main people making this book. And so there's a bias. Like, I've worked with Stephen Green, but I was really happy to see him doing this. And what in the beginning was a story of, anyway, I read 8, 9, 10, and 11 all this week, which actually helped.
Sure.
You know, not spread out through months because there's a lot going on and it's very mystical. And I think in the beginning, what you had was a story of dad and a son. And, you know, the kid's kind of young and the dad's upset and kind of not great at it. And they get separated in space and they meet crazy space people. But at that point, it worked for me because those were all just stand-ins for human stuff, except it was a space monkey. I mean, it could have been he was lost in Oklahoma. And then as we kept going, there's a bigger thing going on. And there's space gods and blah, 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 and all that stuff. And I lost the thread. And, you know, everybody starts gaining powers and there's a club and, you know, that's not my favorite thing. It's space opera. It's exactly what they said it would be, and it's fine. But as I read all those issues at the end, it was pretty coherent at the end. And I do like a coda. I like that, you know, the villain is defeated, and then we see what happens after the fact. And, you know, the kid has these kind of god powers at the end, you know, and his dad is like, great, we'll use that to deliver stuff faster. You know, and so they go back to trucking together with their space monkey friend now. And I was like, all right, I like that as an end. Like, it's the end of a movie ending.
It becomes Clint Eastwood at the end.
I think that the whole thing was an explosion of imagination and fantasy. And there were some really cool, maybe better images than there were ideas and have it all float together. But it did a thing. And I think it did what it was supposed to. I don't think it should have gone on any longer than it did, which is fine. But ultimately, it's a beautiful book. I'm glad I read it, you know, but it was ambitious. It was trying to do a thing.
We had the final issue of Six Sidekicks of Trigger Keaton, number 6, Chris Starks. And I wanted to mention, because we've been enjoying this miniseries, and it ended in the most Hollywood way possible. I don't love the reveal of the killer, but then again, I don't really feel like it was about that.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I thought, oh, this wasn't really about who the killer was. It was just watching these people. You know,
right, so the killer turned out to be an executive who had worked on all of Trigger Keaton's shows originally and just finally got sick of him and had him killed. And
well, he was costing him too much money.
Right, and payouts and insurance stuff. And so the sidekicks find out, and in exchange for not turning him in, he offers them a show. And so that they're all stars now. And so that was the most Hollywood possible ending this could possibly have. It made sense for the characters in this story. They're in some, like, terrible, almost like... I wouldn't even say it's like anything. It's not even like Power Rangers. It's just this terrible kung fu show with all the ridiculous costumes.
Not the Avengers, the Eternals.
Yeah. I thought that was funny, the way to end it. I thought this series was a lot of fun. I'm happy that these guys keep putting books out, and I hope there's
another
one.
And you can go back. Soon. Like, he could do a story with one or two of these folks in the future just for an issue or two, and I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, I hope they do more.
Yeah.
Hey, those are the books we wanted to talk about. Actually, I had a lot of books. No, I had like, well, higher than average. No, I think I had 18 or 19 books this week. It was a good amount of books.
I had that many. But I thought I almost had not many, but then like indie books, I had about the same amount of non-Marvel DC books as I did Marvel DC, which is...
I think last week I had 9 of those, and this week I had like 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. It was a lot. Anyway, patreon.com/ifanboy, the patron, so I mentioned earlier, everyone was a patron because a vote to add a book to the rundown. We call that the patron pick. And this week's patron pick by a wide margin was Regarding the Matter of Oswald's Body, number one from Boom Studios, written by Christopher Cantwell, with art by Luca Casalanguida.
Nice. Casalanguida.
Colors by Giada Marchisio, and letters by And World Design.
And World Design.
I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I have several people in my life who send me tweets in text message form that I might be interested in. One of which was from Tim Seeley this week, who said something along the lines of, comic books used to be named after the characters in them, like Batman, Daredevil, Casper the Friendly Ghost. But now they're like, where the fuck are my keys? Like, this is these long sentences.
What's the... That's funny.
There were two of those books this week, at least two of those books this week. Yep. So anyway, this is Christopher Cantwell.
Did he really write, where the fuck are my keys?
No, that's the joke I put in. He wrote something
that's
else.
That's a good joke.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So... remember when, Josh, when conspiracy theories are kind of fun and, you know, you could talk about and read about it without inspiring sedition and assassination?
You know what? Now that you say it, I do, but I had completely forgotten. You say the word conspiracy, I'm like, oh, shut up.
In the 90s, one of my college roommates and I were super into the JFK conspiracies and Oswald. And we watched Oliver Stone's JFK every Thursday for an entire semester.
Oswald.
So that was like back when it was fun. I mean, look, someone died as a result, but it was like no harm, no foul to discuss JFK conspiracies as opposed to now where suddenly the Capitol's on fire.
There was theoretically reason and research behind that stuff. And right. Also, every once in a while, it occurs to me, I'm like, how do we still not know? I got mad about it a couple of weeks ago. I remember I just think this is ridiculous. We should know by now. Somebody knows, which leads me to think maybe there just wasn't, because nobody can shut up for that long.
Yeah.
Anyway, I did not know what Regarding the Matter of Oswald's Body was about at all, which, you know, like, I just pictured a person named Oswald, and then right away I went, oh, that Oswald, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And so going for it in this, Christopher Cantwell's a great writer. Not everything he does is great.
No.
Or just, that's not all for me, but this seems like it'd be totally in my wheelhouse. Luca Casalanguida, Casalanguida, whatever you say it. Great art, perfect for the thing.
Yes.
I really wanted to like this more than I did.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I didn't love it. I was hoping to love it, like you know, like obviously, like I just said, I spent a lot of time bathing in the JFK conspiracy waters in my college.
And there were no witches or magic or any shit.
Yeah.
Like it was...
I opened the first page and it was a little redacted flow chart. And I was like, ooh, Mexico City, that's where the guy the government says was Oswald was, but clearly wasn't Oswald in the photo. Like I suddenly went right back there in my head and I was like, oh shit. Yeah. So I was excited and then... you know, this was a pretty standard issue where a shadowy government operative assembles a team of sort of small-time misfits. Criminals and other misfits to do something related to the Oswald conspiracy. And we don't really know what that is. This was entirely a building the team issue. So we meet the bank robber who was pretty bad at bank robbing. We meet the musician who is playing in just the wrong bar. Who else do we see? There's a is there a sharpshooter or is that somebody else? I don't know. There's just a bunch of guys. There's a guy who desperately wants to be in the FBI or the CIA, and he's a crack shot, but he's secretly gay. He gets brought in. There's a woman who was in prison.
This would be one of my criticisms, is that that's a black woman, and we're in the early 60s, and so that's a time very fraught. But it wasn't immediately clear to me that she was a black woman.
Hmm.
It just wasn't clear. I think that because she had her hair straightened and it just iconographically, like I didn't understand right away that she was a black woman, which would have made it clearer her stance. Like was she in Texas or was it somewhere else?
Yeah, she's in Dallas County Jail.
Okay, so you got a black woman in jail in 1960. Is it three?
Three.
Because she didn't refuse. She kept trying to order from a place where she was segregated from.
Yeah.
That's great. Do that. But it didn't graphically tell me that right away for whatever reason. Like it just looked like she was either a Latina woman or something. I don't know. It didn't quite read. And so it took me a second. That's not a script problem. It's just a design thing. You know, and then the thing that they're trying to do is the photo of Oswald with the rifle. If you know anything about it, you've seen it and the shadows don't match and whatever, blah, blah, blah. Is they need to find a person who looks exactly like that photo, which is a ridiculous conceit. And I don't have a problem with that, by the way. But if you're going to fill in the dots of this thing that is so well known, I think it should be more interesting than this was, which to find a bunch of misfits and put them together and this guy who works for the quote-unquote government or something like that. And I don't know. I kind of hope that it's like they had none of these people have anything to do with it. It's just kind of a red herring. I don't know. If you're filling in the blanks to get to that end point, I'm like, I don't know. This is where I want to start.
Right.
But also, I think I just really want to know what happens, and this is just wasting my time.
I mean, the flowchart, you know, hits all the ticks, all the boxes. You got Mexico City, you got Dallas, you got New Orleans, you got Cuba, and then down at the bottom, there Lee Harvey Oswald goes to a decoy who comes out of the group of four that we just met. There's someone else who's rejected from Corsica. So there's a lot that I should really be excited about here, and I'm hoping I'm excited enough to remember to read the second issue, only because we often read these comics from other publishers, and I just forget that they exist. And then when the second issue comes out, I forgot. And then by the time I realize it's been four issues, and I go, oh, never mind. So hopefully I remember the second issue.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, so this leads us to ratings.
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 Out of five, I'm going to give it three.
I was also going to go with three. But in this instance, the three book is both going to be us saying we are pretty much sticking with it, provided you don't forget it exists.
Correct. I will stick with it if I don't forget it comes out.
Yep. Yeah.
There you go. Regarding the matter of Oswald's body from Boom Studios.
I think that's really interesting that we both had the same take on it, because I didn't know where that was going to go. But that tells us something, that we're getting somewhere.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Everyone who's a patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. But if you're a patron at the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live on the show, bestowed by us live with sometimes no prep.
I have prep.
Okay, prep. Go for it.
No rest holds. And I don't know what that is. That's with the name that I have, though. So that's what I'm going to work with. It's a genderless name. It is No Rest Holds.
It's a robot.
Corrects the vision of everyone within 20 feet of them.
Oh.
If you are within that area, your vision will return to its optimal set.
Wow.
If you're wearing glasses, it's going to fuck you up.
Sure.
Or contacts is even worse, because you can take the glasses off immediately. But, you know, basically, like, if you're in a restaurant with this dude or lady or wrestling move. Right. I'm sorry. I just assume that people listening to dudes and the stats bear that up. But your vision will be clear as day. And it might be, for example, that you're sitting there and you did not know that you had failing vision. It had been so slow and you just, you know, I don't know, I'm squinting a lot. I had headaches. I don't really know why. And all of a sudden, like, oh, I think I might need glasses. You know,
what's his area of effect there? Is it
about
20
feet in every direction? 20 feet in every direction.
So he could go to like a high class restaurant where there's people in like tuxedos and like wraps, fur wraps, and monkeys with tuxedos on are serving people. And suddenly you're just like, people, old man taking glasses off. Like a lot of murmuring going on, a lot of like drinks, things clacking on the table and clinking because people have dropped forks.
But I also like the idea that when it happens, like it's like a magical moment where all of a sudden you see everything that you sort of hadn't been seeing but didn't know you weren't seeing. I like it.
You look like there's that.
There's a clarity, like, oh my God, look at the beauty of this floral arrangement in the middle of the table, and I had lost it. And somebody's like, look, a dime!
Chris St. George always keeps the introductory price.
Oh.
So like, you know, you sign up for a streaming service and they're giving you like a deal, like a $3 a month deal. Chris's just never expires, or like a phone service. Or whatever. Like whatever that low introductory price is, Chris is just whatever mystical aura, he just keeps that low introductory price.
So he doesn't need to call Comcast every 2 years?
No.
Because that's what I have to do. Yeah, hey, no, my bill just went from $90 to $600. You think we can do something about this?
Yeah. Yeah. So he always just keeps it.
I don't know that that's going to make a big impact on you financially. I mean, unless Chris is really sort of checking on the line.
No, but you know, it's just like a nice thing.
Right, but from a stress level.
Sure.
You hate that you plan your bills, and all of a sudden, well, what happened here?
Yeah.
This was $100 last month.
Right.
That was the introductory period, and as you can see, you're signed up for a three-year contract.
Now it's $30,000.
Does that extend to balloon payments? Does he never have balloon payments, or is that a different thing?
No, that's a different thing.
Okay, yeah. Fine. I've never had a balloon payment, but I'm terrified of them. It's like quicksand. Like I'm afraid I'm gonna go to pay my bills one day. You're like, what the hell is this? And balloon payment. Gotcha. No.
You thought your adult life would be quicksand and balloon payments.
I didn't even know there were payments about anything. That was after I stopped worrying about quicksand. It's much worse than quicksand.
It's a different kind of quicksand. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can vote to add a book to the rundown and get a superpower. And we thank everyone who supports the show that way. Thank you very much. Do you want to do an email, a quick one, a long one? You decide.
Yeah, I want to do them both. I think we can get through this because the first one's super short. Ken from the Great White North writes in, are there any 30-year-old Simpsons references that you still use on a weekly basis? Now, why I found this interesting, early in the week, I posted a picture of big shirtless Ron on my Instagram. And for my whole life, whenever I see a male not wearing a shirt, I go, big shirtless Rod. And yes, I said Rod because I got it wrong. But I realized I just say it to myself and have been forever, which I assume is where this question came from. But then I thought, Connor doesn't use Simpsons references. Really? You're not a Simpsons person, are you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, of course I am. Okay. But when I saw this question come in originally, I thought, I think there are, and I think at this point, I don't even realize that they're from The Simpsons anymore.
Sure.
And I just can't think of any, but I'm pretty sure there are.
Now, I can think of, and first of all,
But I think there are fewer now than say, 15, 20 years ago.
Well,
because it's probably been longer that I haven't watched The Simpsons than.
It's definitely been longer that you haven't watched The Simpsons.
Right. So it's sort of either faded or just they're such a part of my brain lexicon that I don't even remember that they're from The Simpsons anymore. I'm just trying to think of what they are.
I'm sure that, I mean, I stopped watching it 25, 30, somewhere in between there. I like eighth season, let's say.
Yeah.
I think I maybe watched it for a couple of years after that, but it didn't stick with me. But I know that on a weekly basis, that's what he said too, which I think is correct. If anybody mentions salad, I will mention that you do not win friends with salad. Mm-hmm. If anybody mentions a dental plan, that's gonna set me off. There's a lot of them in there from the first handful of seasons.
Yeah.
Big Shirtless Rod's one. You don't win friends with salad. Those are the two that I can think
of. I feel like I do Gil a lot.
Yeah.
Like in work settings where it's like, oh.
That's not a line.
No, but it's more like, not even so much a character, but like just in my head, I'm like, you know, I say things in Gil voice. Or like, you know, I need a win.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's more stuff like that. I don't know. There's stuff, again, it's so ingrained in me. It's been 30 plus years that I don't even remember anymore. It's like Star Wars dialogue. Yeah. But there's definitely less of it. Like, that's definitely the thing that was much more prevalent when I was in my 20s. Was just doing Simpsons references.
Well, probably because your wife probably didn't grow up watching it, and so it just falls on deaf ears.
Well, it's also just, you know, I think I watched it until my 20s.
Yeah.
And so it was always there. I just
remember at one point when I was like, I don't think this is funny anymore.
Yeah, no,
and,
exactly.
And then it never stopped. And it's not that it isn't funny. It's just that it changed. It just changed as it was supposed to, and it wasn't the same thing.
Right.
You know, when we started watching that, those are all people who grew up on like 50s and 60s cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's our frame of reference. Like, does you ever think about that? Like, everybody who wrote everything when we were younger that we watched, we were all like influenced by stuff in the 50s and 60s. And now it's just different.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Also, just, you know, there's been a lot of other things since then.
Sure. Yes. But those stick with me. And I mean, Seinfeld. Seinfeld, Pulp Fiction, Star Wars.
Seinfeld, Simpsons, Star Wars is sort of the holy trinity of references of people who are like us.
We Seinfeld a lot still to this day.
Oh, sure. Plus, you still have like Curb Your Enthusiasm on, so that sort of sensibility stays around. I'll read Jimmy J's email. Jimmy J says, I know you guys are longtime fans of Brian Michael Bendis, in spite of the mixed quality of his later work. The question I have to ask is, do you think Bendis could be a good editor someday? I ask this question due to his eye for talent, and he can come up with new concepts and characters, just not always good at executing them. Examples include Miles Morales and Riri Williams. They are good characters on paper, but I think Bendis always had trouble executing them, especially Riri. It took until writers like Saladin, Ahmed, and Eve Ewing was when the characters began to shine.
Okay, so the reason that I stuck this in here is that I disagree with almost all of it, and I think it's coming from a premise that isn't correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that to correct Jimmy J. I say it because I just think it's interesting that this was the question. And also, I could be wrong. I don't know.
It's all personal.
But I cannot think of a professional writer in comics who would be a worse editor than Brian Michael Bendis. If there was ever a guy who is the single solitary writer who is going to sit there and crap out whatever it is on paper, and I don't even mean that in a negative way, it's Brian Michael Bendis. It's what he does. He's not a writing collaborator. I can't think of, I think he did something with Brian Reed at some point, but he doesn't work with anybody. He writes scripts and he hands them in. He writes them compulsively, and that is not what an editor does. At all. Right. And also, an editor does not come up with concepts and then have somebody else write them. That's not...
That's not accurate.
Well, at least in the way, like, this guy's a pure writer. That's what I'm getting at. You know, which is what, you know, most... They want the pitches to come in from the writers for the most part. It might be that there's an overall thing like, hey, we should do it this way. And
right, but those pitches... Sometimes they're blind pitches from the writers, but mostly it's, we want you to write Shazam, send us a pitch on it.
Right.
But or it's, we have this concept for Shazam. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a pitch on this concept?
Right.
Like, it's definitely...
But I don't feel like they would hand somebody a character. Here's this character we came up with. Write a story for it.
Yes, they do all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. That works all the time in Marvel DC. It works all the different ways, but that definitely happens all the time.
I usually feel like the characters are thought up by whoever the writer is. Like, it comes out of something, and then they go, oh, that's a thing. Let's build that out.
No, you give a lot more credence to the creative teams than it actually happens
in the world. But do you agree with me on the standpoint of Bendis?
I mean, I think he does come up with great concepts, and I think he does come up with great characters. And I think if he's picking the art teams out, which he certainly has in some cases. And
I don't know that Bendis has the best eye in picking out the best collaborators and finding the best artists. He certainly drugs them out, but I do think that what he has an eye is finding collaborators who work with his style. He's very aware of people who do not work for his style. And I always think of Tony Harris at one point. He goes, I love Tony Harris, but I can't work with him because Tony Harris does, you know, 2-3 panels a page, and that's not, they're going to work with Bendis' style.
Right. And that was a sort of disastrous John Romita Jr. collaboration because that was just the wrong person to work with.
Yeah, exactly. I think then the last bit is interesting is that Saladin Ahmed and Eve Ewing being the people to make Miles Morales and Riri Williams shine. I don't know. I didn't read much Riri Williams. I read her from Bendis for a little while, and that was kind of it. I don't even think I read all of it. Miles Morales, I think, you know, I liked Miles Morales when Bendis did it. Mm-hmm. And I like when Saladin Ahmed did it. I think he changed it to be a more, this is going to sound dumb, an authentic character. You know, basically, he's supposed to be a young mixed-race kid in the city, and he's been being written by, you know, a middle-aged Jewish man in Portland, Oregon. Probably not the best viewing of it, but I don't think it was bad. I think that he created a thing, and then somebody else took it and ran with it and sort of adapted it for that. But that said, worst fucking costume redesign ever. The original Miles Morales Spider-Man costume is perfect, and the new one does just ugly.
I have no idea what it looks like. I haven't even seen Miles Morales in a comic in years.
It's like a big pullover jacket, and he has red eyes now. And I'm reading the book. I like the book. It's cool, and I think, and I also don't think it's unrelated to what Bendis did. It's just you know, the dialogue has shifted a little bit. The point of view has shifted a little bit, and I think it works. Riri, I can't speak to.
Yeah, and so the question is, does, you know, we don't know who pairs the writers with the artists. In indie books, we know the collaborators just themselves, and we know people like Remender works with terrific artists in his indie stuff. And is it Bendis bringing his people on? Is it an editor assigning them? We just don't know who the collaborators are or the stories come from. I've only read Miles Morales and Riri Williams when Bendis wrote them. I haven't read them by anybody else, so I can't speak to that.
I think when it comes to artists, it just depends on you know, where the story comes from, where it started. You get paired with somebody, but there are smart writers. People who are smart about their career and have the clout to do so seem to have a say.
For sure. I mean, you can tell that Bendis is the Bendis. People Bendis works with are the people he works with all the time, or, you know, so he's clearly like, I want to work with this person.
Tom King, these are people who make sure they have artists and will bring people in. I mean, you think about like Jorge Fornes, you know, Tom had to fight for him. Like, they were like, nah, he's not, you know, and he's like, no, this guy's amazing, you know, and he was right. Because they're writing the thing. You got Remender and Bendis are interesting because they were artists, you know, whatever. So, like, they had a visual style early. But Bendis is one of the first guys that I noticed. I was like, oh, he's making sure that he has artists who fit with his thing. And he talked about it. I heard him say it on interviews. But, again, that dude is a writer.
Yeah.
I cannot think of another person. Well, Tom King's a writer. He's not an editor. Josh Williamson, though, he's an editor.
Yeah.
And he said that, like, he wants to be, he could see himself in a Jim Shooter role or, you know.
Could he if he had to? Gun to his head? Sure.
Well, it's like Wade. He seems to be an okay, like, chief at, like overall editor everything, chief. But it still feels like a waste in a way. Like, that guy, when he puts words in a script, it's magic. Like, that's what he should be doing.
Right. Contact at ifanboy.com is where you can write in for this show and our Media Explode show. If you write it for Media Explode, put it in the title of the email, the subject line. Thank you for doing that. Let's do a rundown of the holiday schedule. Once we talk about the fact that there are two shows behind this one in the feed, one was the Tom King Talksplode that Josh just mentioned. It's Tom King interviews.
I really, really enjoyed that, and you should listen to it.
So that's behind this show. And then right behind this show is a special edition on Injustice, the DC animated adaptation of the Tom Taylor series that was a tie-in to a video game. So you can listen to that animated Brain Trust discussion on Injustice. We talked about the book earlier this year. It's been an Injustice year. So now we've gotten that out of our system. Now onto the holiday schedule. So this is Pick Week 806. We have 4 more shows this year until we go on holiday break, but we have a whole mess of special edition shows. So you're going to be getting like 11 shows between now and break in total, in addition to those 4 picks of the week. So next week we have Media Explode, and then episode 807. And then before the Thanksgiving holiday, we're going to try to get out our Shang-Chi and Eternals special edition shows. and then we pick like 808, and then we owe you two booksplodes. We looked at the chart and realized we somehow skipped a month, so we owe you two booksplodes before the end of the year.
We
so
read a novel, Connor.
That's probably it. So we're going to have one booksplode for you on December 2nd and one booksplode for you on December 9th. Basically, from here to the end of the year, there's going to be a new show every Thursday and every Sunday for the rest of the, until our shows are all up.
Probably.
Probably, unless something goes wrong.
It's the holidays. You never know what's
going on. And then Pickley 810 on December 12th. And then the final Talksplode of the year, probably on December 16th. And then our traditional final show of the year, All Media Year-End Roundup, will be December 18th. I may have skipped things in the middle, but basically, there's a lot going on between now and December 18th. You're going to have a lot of shows. And we'll be back after our break on January 9th with Pickley Week 811. So that's the holiday schedule. We'll keep repeating that for the rest of the year.
And you guys should, the people who appreciate that know it's coming, you should thank Connor, because I'm not doing what he just did. He's the person who does that. And thank God for it, because I look at it and just go, oh God, just tell me when to show up. Just tell me what I need to do. Give me my assignment, Chief. Where are we? Oh, we have to end the show?
Yeah.
We have to end the show.
End the show.
Okay, here we go. So I'm doing the last part.
Yes, where the part at the end that says the outro.
After outro, and then there's a brackets with J in it. So this, and then this signals.
You. Signals Josh.
The end of the show.
Yeah.
I've read this. Okay, I know this part. I know.
I hope so.
I don't. This is a bad bit because it doesn't quite sound like a bit, and also it's annoying. Mm. So here we go.
Yeah.
Head over to ifanboy.com to find all of our shows. And our somebody out there right now, they're drinking from a diamond chalice. And they called their accountant. Well, they had, the, you know, they were like, you know what, go ahead. I've been thinking about this and let's just work this. And then I started that bit and they just looked over and the assistant person just looked at them. The look, there was no words. It was like, no, you know, and it was like, a little head shake. No. They blew it. Gonna move.
Yeah, he was like, authorize the payment, sir. Mm-hmm. And he was like, hold on a second.
Yeah, wait, what?
No, that was a bad bit.
Yeah.
Send that payment instead to Around Comics.
Go to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our shows and our history of comic book writing from all the writers that we had that is probably way, way out of date, but it's there. There's evergreen content as well.
Sure.
Go to facebook.com/ifanboy, @ifanboy on Twitter, @ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You can follow us individually @CSKilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. You can subscribe to our YouTube page @youtube.com/ifanboy. You can keep up to date on old video show re-uploads as we head towards the end of the existing long shows, and then you'll have a lot of old mini shows that are left over. So, for example, if you were thinking, geez, what new comics came out on July 10th, 2008, there's a mini there. There was no use to anybody that's there. There's a show on Jonah Hex, which that is an evergreen kind of thing. That's a great comic. Yep. We talked about the movie, I assume, which was a bad movie. It was a very bad movie. But it was such a bad movie that I remember, Connor and I remember the experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And
there's
something special about that. Like it was a properly bad movie. And you forget. So not only was Josh Brolin Thanos and Cable, but he was Jonah Hex. This guy has been in a lot of comic book movies.
Sure.
And then finally, there's Old Ads, Tales of Suspense number 57, which is that?
Yeah, that's
this
the
was an anthology episode where we had three segments, so you did Old Ads.
And that's the first appearance of Hawkeye in an Iron Man book. Tales of Suspense number 57. Cowboy Ninja Viking, I remember that. And the Superhero Dictionary, which I have now. Connor had it. Now I have it. Those are what are on those video shows. Sorry. I'll just end it. I'm sorry.
As Josh mentioned, we have only a couple more months left of the full-length show uploads. In fact, and we did not plan this out. It just worked out this way. The very last upload of a full-length iFanboy video show will be December 31st on New Year's Eve.
Holy cow.
So that will be it for the uploads for the full-length show. There will still be mini uploads for a while because there's a lot more of those. We've only been doing one a week.
Here's the thing. They upload faster.
So
smaller files.
That's true. As at the very end of the year, we'll have all of our old full-length iFanboy video shows uploaded to YouTube if anyone cares to watch them.
You know, I can tell how long ago we did that is that when I had to upload one of those files, it was like an all-day affair, and I wouldn't even think about it now.
Oh, it was 24 hours to upload a show to the distributor, Revision 3, and if there was any kind of internet hiccup or hit or problem, you had to start all over, and usually, I don't know how you did it, but I did it overnight, so I wouldn't even be aware that there was a problem until I woke up the next morning, and I was like, well, fuck. I just lost 8 hours of upload time.
Bandwidth was different then.
Yeah.
Also, we'd probably be better at compressing now, but whatever.
Oh, it was all, yeah, it's all a problem. Anyway, this is the end of the show. If you like the show, please leave a review, a star rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, whatever aggregator you use. Even the better that's word of mouth. If people ask you what podcast you listen to, we always appreciate it. People say iFanboy, helping us spread the love around the world. Thank you very much. And that's it for this week's show. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I'll say statistics and hide the truth. I'll tell your dad anything that you want me to. I'll hide your locket under the dirt. I'll be your word. I'll hide your locket under the dirt.